you.
Bless you. Please be seated. Well, we have a wonderful topic today, and I really enjoyed all your sharings. I hope I'm 94 years old and still teaching the Word. Yes. And that would be awesome, wouldn't it? That we just, every single day, all day, just speak God's Word until we take our last breath. I also just got really blessed with Grace's sharing, too, because she was really, with her heart, asking questions. And when we do that, it's amazing, but God answers them, right? And so that's what we had talked about last week, was the grace of giving, which is very appropriate for your name, by the way. Today we are going to talk about heart giving. And I'll give you a little preview. The last two Sundays, we have a break for a week here, and then on the 23rd, we're going to be talking about joyous giving. And on the last Sunday, we're going to be talking about purposeful giving. So today is heart giving. And I am going to be talking about tithing. But the first question that I'm going to be asking about tithing is, what about tithing? What is tithing? And I want you to think and see, have you ever watched one of those TV evangelists where they're really seeking to have you give a lot of money to them? And they say, now take up, take a bill out of your pocket and hold it up in the air and say, this is your seed money. And if your seed is going to go into anointed ground, if you give it to our ministry, because we need to do this, this, and this, and that. And just hold it up in the air, because God is going to return to you 100-fold. I'm not very good at this kind of preaching, okay? But they are. They're very motivational. And they get people standing up even and putting their envelope or their money in the air and like a rah-rah, get real excited about giving your money away. And but that promise, first of all, about... Have you ever heard that? About you'll get back 100-fold. If you put some money in the offering today, you're going to get back 100-fold. That's why I wanted to do the abundant sharing before I taught, because this is not about our receiving an abundant sharing. This whole series is about our learning more about God's Word and what He truthfully says about giving, so that our hearts can be full and we can change and we can grow and we can see the promises come to pass that God has for us. Well, that thing about 100-fold is in the context of the parable of the sower. And the seed is the Word of God. And it's sown in our hearts. Our hearts are the ground. And when the Word of God is sown in our hearts, then it does yield, and it's good ground, then it does yield 100-fold. So that's what we want to do today, is to sow the Word in our hearts so that it can bring forth the true fruit that God wants us to see. So I really, I also just want to make a side note here that I really appreciate your attention and your eagerness, and all week long people called me and even after fellowship last week and said how much that this series is blessing them. And I really attribute that to grace. I really do, because it's God's grace that any of us have money or anything to give, right? Remember that first point we made last week, is God owns everything and we own nothing? Well, that's the same thing even when you, as a teacher, stand up here. It's by God's grace that we have this beautiful, wonderful, awesome book that we get to preach out of and look at and learn from. So you want to learn about tithing? Okay. This is an overview of tithing. We're going to have three parts of just, they're going to be pretty short. I'm going to try to cram a lot of things into about half an hour here. We're going to have an overview of the Old Testament meaning of tithing. We're going to look at Malachi 3, because that's the major section that everyone uses to teach tithing. And we're going to learn some really cool things in there. And then the last part will be an application of tithing or the concept of tithing in our day and time. So, first of all, the first place that tithing is talked about is in with Abraham, how he gave tithes to Melchizedek. And you can write down the section. We're not going to read it. It's Genesis 14, 17 to 20. And then it also is explained a lot more in Hebrews chapter 7. Basically, what happened was Abraham went to war and he got all these spoils of war. And when he came back, he took a tenth of it and he gave it to Melchizedek, who was a king and a priest. And Melchizedek becomes a type of Jesus Christ. The funniest part about this whole thing of using Abraham is that he never even kept any of those spoils of war. He gave all of it away. So the tithe that he gave to Melchizedek was not out of anything that he owned. He didn't own any of it. It was from spoils of war. But the thing that we can see about that, first of all, he gives it to Melchizedek because he says he's the possessor of the Most High God. It's an acknowledgement that God was the one who had helped him win that battle. And number two is that it was completely voluntary. Nobody told him he had to do it. Nobody said it. It wasn't a rule. There was no law at that point, right? He just wanted to acknowledge that God had given him the victory. So he gave it to the representative that he felt stood for the Most High God. And then that becomes a type of Jesus Christ, how later Jesus Christ is going to be our high priest and king in one guy. So that's about Abraham. I want you to see, it was voluntary, and it was from an acknowledgement of God Most High. Okay? Now, the second record is about Jacob. And Jacob is fleeing from Esau, and he goes to Bethel, and he makes a promise to God. He has nothing. He's not taking anything with him at all, except himself. He's fleeing. He makes a promise to God, and he says, I'm going to tithe of everything that you give me of mine increase, if you just will take care of me. And then he goes on his merry way, and he spends a long time up in Syria with his uncle Laban. He gets married to Leah and Rachel. He has 12 sons. He gets all this wealth. And then he comes back finally to Bethel, and he says, oh yeah, I never did tithe. I should tithe. And so he makes a sacrifice then. But it doesn't really describe how he tithed, what he tithed, anything about it. It just says that he remembered that he had made that promise to God. So what's really interesting about that record is that in the burnt offering that he gives at Bethel when he comes back, there is a humbling that he does in his heart. Where all this time he was working hard, he was earning money, he had believed God, he trusted God, God gave him all this prosperity, but he himself, Jacob, had felt like he was the one that had deserved that. He gets back to Bethel and he realizes, no, it wasn't me, it was God. He had really been taking care of me the entire time. And that's the time that he's reconciled with Esau. And actually, even though it appears that they're quite separate, they end up spending the last years of Isaac's life, when Isaac was still alive, together taking care of them, the two brothers. They reconciled after that huge mess. So you can go read the story of that in Genesis 28 and some other passages of Genesis. But what I want to see about that is that there's a humbling that needs to happen in our hearts, where we acknowledge that what we have received has come from God. Now we get to the law. So you can turn to Deuteronomy 14. There's a really great book that's back in the bookstore. Todd has it up here, so I'll show it to you. It says, Why Christians Should Not Tithe. And it's by a guy named James Quiggle. But And the first half of the book is a very detailed history of tithing, of understanding all about tithing in the Old Testament. If you want to know more about it, it's really a great book. Don't be put off by the title at all. So look at Deuteronomy 14, verse 22. This is the purpose of tithing, of why God set up tithing in the Old Testament. 14:22 first. Thou shalt truly tithe all the increase of thy what? Seed. That the field bringeth forth year by year. And thou shalt eat before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose to place his name there. The tithe of thy corn, of thy wine, of thy oil, and the first things of thy herds and of thy flocks. Here's the purpose. That thou mayest learn to fear the Lord thy God always. God set up the tithe in the Old Testament that the people would learn to trust him. Fear the Lord means to trust him. That's why we call this seminar Trusting God Concerning Giving and Receiving. Because every session and everything that we're talking about has to do with our just learning how to trust him more. The purpose of the tithe was so that the people could learn to trust God. Now, how did they do that? Look at Leviticus chapter 27. Leviticus 27 and verse 30. It says, all the tithe of the land. So a tithe just means 10% or a tenth, right? The tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or of the fruit of the tree, is the Lord's. It is holy unto who? The Lord. It's holy, means it's set apart. But God said that all of the produce of the land, so we're talking about fruit, seed, harvest, stuff like barley, wheat, pomegranates, grapes, olives. And then he says the firstlings of the flock, so animals. But he say anything about money? He say anything about money? No. All the tithing has to do with produce and production of the harvest. So those people who were responsible for tithing were only the farmers. Now, obviously, it was a very agrarian society, right, where the majority of the people earned money this way. But how many farmers do you know? Okay, one or two, yeah, right? But normally speaking, there's no farmers among us, right? We are workers. So did God tell the merchants to tithe? Or those people that were serving in some other kind of capacity? The elders, the ones who sat at the gate and taught the people, did they tithe? No, he's talking about the produce of the land. But the important thing to see here is that it was holy to the Lord. Now we're going to find out why. Look at Numbers 18. Numbers 18 really explains about the first fruits and a lot of other different offerings and how you do the offerings. But in verse 21, he's talking to the children of Levi. Now, there were 12 tribes, and Levi was only one of the tribes, okay? It says, verse 21, and behold, I have given the children of Levi all the tenths, or all the tithe in Israel for an inheritance, for their service which they serve, even the service of the tabernacle of the congregation. That is the purpose of the tithe, was to take care of the Levites. Now this is what's really, really funny. If you even do this mathematically, you just pretend, okay, that everybody only, you had 200 people in a village, okay, and they each grew 10 carats. Okay, what's the tithe of 10 carats for each person? One. Okay, so that means that you would be giving 200 carats to the Levites, right? Okay, now what I didn't tell you was that the Levites were responsible for tithing of what they got to the priests. There's a difference between Levites and priests. The Levites are the whole family of the whole tribe. The priests are only of the family of Aaron. And the family of Aaron were the ones who were to serve in the temple and in the tabernacle to actually do the sacrifices. And you got the high priest from the family of Aaron. So the Levites, as a whole tribe, were given all the tithe. Then they were to give 10% of that tithe to the priests. You figure it all out. If they gave two of those carats to the priests, right? 20 carats to the priests, all right, would be their tithe to the priests. That leaves them 180 carats, okay? That is exactly 1/12. They're one of the tribes. It made an equality where nobody had more than anybody else. Because the people had given their one carat, so they have 9 left. And if you have 20 Levites in the city, they all have 9 carats. It was a way for God to provide an inheritance to the Levites so that it would be the same as if they had grown their own carats. It's just amazing, really. Okay, look at 2 Chronicles 31 for a minute. This is a story about Hezekiah, and hopefully you did read a little bit last week on Hezekiah, because he's probably the greatest example of a man who was prosperous. That the purpose of giving this portion to the Levites, okay, was this. Verse 4 of chapter 31. Moreover, he commanded the people that dwelt in Jerusalem to give the portion of the priests and the Levites, that they might be encouraged in the law of the Lord. What God wanted and why he set up Levi to have this inheritance was so that they would teach the people the law of the Lord, and they would encourage the people constantly. That would be their service. So that they had time to do that. Because if you have to grow your own carrots, it takes time, right? Okay, and you need to spend all your time doing that so you have carrots. Well, what the Levites were doing was spending all their time encouraging the people in the word and teaching them the law and being there for them in service. So that's the reason why God provided for them. Isn't that cool? It's also the other thing to see in this is that tithing is called a heave offering. It's a type of offering, and that's spelled H-E-A-V-E, and so you can go study it if you want to. It's a whole type of offering. But basically the meaning of that particular offering is that it was voluntary. It was not required. There was no commandment that said, thou shalt tithe, and if you don't tithe, you're going to get this. Because there were a lot of commandments like that, right? Thou shalt have no other gods before me, you know? And if you don't do that, I mean, they had serious consequences if they went to disobey the Ten Commandments, right? And many of the commandments in the Old Testament are, you know, do this and you'll get blessed. Don't do this, you probably will get some curses, right? Okay, well, tithing does not fall under those categories. So I told you there were 4 different tithes. The farmers tithe to the Levites tithe of that tithe to the priests, then the people were to tithe to themselves. Also, every festival time, 3 times a year, every male person was supposed to go to Jerusalem and celebrate Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles. How were they supposed to fund that? Well, God set up another tithe where they actually took of their 90% that they had left, right? And they tithed to themselves. so that they could bring offerings and things to Jerusalem to celebrate together with the Levites and the priests. So it became a fellowship offering. Then the fourth one is that every third year they were to take of the stored grain and the stored foodstuffs that they had left at the end of the year. This would be late in the year after all the harvest in the third year, and they were to give that money to the poor. So God also built not only a system of being able to take care of the Levites, he built in a perfectly fabulous welfare system that worked, where not every year, not every month, but every third year, that the poor, it would be sure that they would be taken care of. And then every seventh year, he had a whole other system too, where there would be all this abundance so that they could all rest and have rest and a Sabbath for the land. So the purpose of tithing was that everyone would be taken care of. Now it appears, if you the way some people figure out the tithing is that these poor farmers, they get the brunt of everything, right? The event, if you add it all up, it looks like they would be paying 23% of their harvest as a tithe, because you got the tithe to the Levites and the tithe for the festivals, and then every third year you got another tithe to the poor. That's a lot of stuff. It doesn't work out that way, because not everybody grows every crop. You only get the crop once a year, so you really are only tithing once a year, right? And even when you're talking about tithing animals, like somebody raises sheep, all right? They're required to tithe too. But they're required to tithe the 10th animal. So you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And then if you have a 10th animal, that's the one you tithe. So if you have 9 sheep only, do you have to tithe? Interesting, huh? So here's the conclusions, all right? Number one, God wanted tithing, what he called tithing, to be a voluntary offering, just like Abraham and Jacob did. There were many other offerings. You can go and read my book, Enriched in Everything. And there's a chapter on first fruits, and there's a chapter on the offerings and the types of offerings. Because, you know, I talked about all those merchants and everybody, they didn't get away scot-free either. they had lots of offerings that they were required to do too. So we're just talking about tithing though, and the purpose of wanting to do this is just basically to show what it is so that we can understand it. So when you talk about wanting to tithe in the New Testament or anything about tithing, you know what you're talking about. Proverbs chapter 3. I said the first point is that it was voluntary. The second one is that you acknowledge God as the source of the increase. And that's what it says here in Proverbs chapter 3, verse 9. Honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thine increase. So shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses shall burst out with new wine. I love that verse. And we've used that verse I don't know how many thousand times, right? To see, come on, give, give, give. Look, you know, you should honor God with your first fruits. Well, first fruits, even of themselves, was just a very small portion of the very first time you harvested anything. So if you were harvesting grapes, the first grapes that you took off the vine, those belong to God. But it's not about a percentage at all. So even when you're talking about first fruits, it is not a percentage. But I love this part, verse 9. What does it say? Honor. Honor the Lord. So these are the lessons I feel like we can really learn from this, is that any kind of giving, I don't care what kind of giving you're talking about, whether you're You give to your family, you give to the poor, you give to the church, you give to a minister, you give to a ministry. Anything like that is honoring the Lord. It's honoring God. And it's an acknowledgement that God gave you the increase. The third point I just wanted to see was that it was proportional. No one person had too little or too much. If it had been money and the Levites got all the money, it would have wrecked their whole society. And that's exactly what happened when the Catholic Church in the 5th century decided that they were going to institute a law, a rule, that every single person had to tithe to Mother Church. The Catholic Church became so wealthy and everybody else so poor. It's historically documented that that does not work. All right, let's go to Malachi, because that's what I really want to get to here. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in my house. And prove me now herewith, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. This is a great passage, right? Okay, but I want to tell you a little bit about the background of this. So before we get to that section, I want you to go to chapter 1. Because Malachi was a prophet who lived about 80 to 100 years after the captivity. They had come back from the captivity in Babylon and had rebuilt the temple under Nehemiah and Ezra. And the people got all messed up. So what was happening, you can see, we'll read in verse 13. Malachi reproves the priests that were living at this time. This is written to the priests. And he says in verse 12, chapter 1, "But you have profaned it in that you say, the table of the Lord is polluted, and the fruit thereof, even his meat, is contemptible. You said, behold what weariness it is, and you have snuffed at it, saith the Lord of hosts. And you brought that which was torn, and the lame, and the sick. Thus you brought an offering. Should I accept this of your hand, saith the Lord? But cursed be the deceiver which hath in his flock a male, and boweth, and sacrifices unto the Lord a corrupt thing. For I am a great king, saith the Lord of hosts, and my name is dreadful among the heathen." God was speaking by way of the prophet, right? He was mad at the priests. He was so mad at them because they were bringing inferior offerings to the sacrifices. If someone brought them a male and they said, this is a vow offering, they would take that, oh, that looks like a nice fat lamb. I think I'm going to want that lamb for my table. So they were taking it and eating it or doing whatever with it and then substituting it with one that was blind or lame or sick. Uh-oh. The priests were doing this on a regular basis, okay? And they were also, look at chapter 2, verse 7. It says, "For the priest's lips should keep knowledge." Remember, the priests were supposed to be teaching them the word, right? "And they should seek the law at his mouth, for he is a messenger of the Lord of hosts. But you are departed out of the way. You have caused many to stumble at the law, and you have corrupted the covenant of Levi, saith the Lord of hosts." What was happening was that the priests who were in Jerusalem, they were not allowing the portions to go to proper distribution. So if they got in 200 carats, they were keeping those 200 carats for themselves. And so it had forced the Levites, who didn't get any of that, to go back and try to make a living somehow because they weren't provided for. And the biggest point is they were not teaching the word. Woohoo! Okay, so that sets this stage. Now keep your finger here and go to Nehemiah. Nehemiah had been instrumental in coming to help them rebuild the wall. He was the king's cupbearer, but he had gone back to Babylon for a while. And during the time he was back in Babylon is when all this stuff started happening with the priests. And you can read about some when he comes back in chapter 10, verse 32 to 39. But I want to look at 13. So you can just set the stage for what was really happening at this time when Nehemiah comes back. So Nehemiah 13, verse 4. Before this, Eliashib, the priest, he's the high priest, having the oversight of the chamber of the house of our God, was allied with Tobiah. Now, Tobiah is an Ammonite. Okay, is an Ammonite an Israelite? No. Tobiah was like the co-governor with another guy named Sanballat. And they were constantly threatening the Israelites and hassling them. But they had an alliance with the king of Babylon, so they felt like they had the right to be in Jerusalem to always be telling everybody what to do. They were the governors. It's like a civil governor or something. So what the high priest Eliashib does is he marries off one of his kids to Tobiah's son. And then, look at verse 5. He prepared for him a great chamber where aforetime they laid the meat offerings, the frankincense, and the vessels, and the tithes of the corn, the new wine, and the oil, which was commanded to be given to the Levites, and the singers, and the porters, and the offerings of the priests. So what the high priest had done was he took over the storehouse where all the tithes were supposed to be kept, and he gave it to this guy who was an unbeliever named Tobiah. So Tobiah has a chamber in the temple. Whew, oh no. So after that, you see how Nehemiah comes back and he goes, oh my goodness, I cannot believe what happened here. So verse 7, I came to Jerusalem and understood of the evil that Eliashib had done for Tobiah in preparing him a chamber in the courts of the house of God, and it grieved me sore. Therefore, I cast forth all the household stuff of Tobiah out of the chamber. Then I commanded, and they cleansed the chambers, and thither brought I again the vessels of the house of God with the meat offering and the frankincense. And I perceived that the portions of the Levites had not been given them. Remember, I told you that, right? For the Levites and the singers that did the work were fled, everyone to his field. Then contended I with the rulers and said, why is the house of God forsaken? And I gathered them together and set them in their place. So Nehemiah came in and kicked butt, you know. He did. He cleansed the temple. He said that was absolutely wrong. But where had they given that chamber? Where was the chamber? It was where the tithes were supposed to go. It was the storehouse. Okay, so now go to, back to Malachi, chapter 3, and we'll read the section that is very popular here. Start in verse 6, for I am the Lord, I change not, therefore you sons of Jacob are not consumed. The only reason they were not consumed, even though they were doing all this messing around, the priests were messing around, and then the people had followed suit and said, well, you're not giving the money to the Levites. Why should I give money to you? So the people themselves had also said, well, nuts to this. I don't think the system is working, so I'm not going to do it. And even so, God was still taking care of them. But because of what they were doing, they were experiencing famine, the crops were failing, and nobody was happy. Least of all the priests, too. Verse 7, even from the days of your father you are gone away from mine ordinance, ordinances and have not kept them. Return unto me, and I will return unto you, saith the Lord of hosts. But you said, wherein shall we return? What are we doing wrong? We're not doing anything wrong. It's those guys, those Levites, those priests are doing everything wrong. We're not doing anything wrong. He goes, no. Will a man rob God? Yet you have robbed me. But you say, wherein have we robbed thee? And God says, in tithes and offerings. Because he set it up that it would be voluntary, that it would take care of the Levites, and that it would be a provision for them to be able to learn the word. And then he says in verse 9, you are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. Now that verse has been used in many, many, many also contexts, with as an implication that because the people were not tithing, they got a curse, right? And then later on, of course, you have the promise that I will rebuke the devourer for your sake. So hold your money up, you know, give your money, because if you don't, you're going to be cursed with a curse. Or something like that, right? Well, giving, whether you call it tithing or not, is not some holy insurance policy that we use against a hedge against trouble. You know, you can't just put your money in the offering and say, okay, well, now I'm protected. Because you know what? I have seen people that tithe and they have something happen to them where they lose their house or they have a fire or someone dies. I mean, serious things. They were tithing. Okay? And I have seen people not tithe and get blessings. So it's not that doesn't equate to anything. So this is what I found out about you are cursed with a curse. I love this. The people that did the Hebrew text in the Old Testament, they're called the Sopharim, they amended this verse. Because originally it said, you have cursed me with a curse. Where God said, you're cursing me. And they thought, oh, no, you can't write that in the Bible. That would be terrible. So they changed it around to, you are cursed with a curse. Because there are no curses in the Old Testament about tithing. There are about a lot of other things. You know, you sleep with your mother. There's some other problems. But tithing itself is not curse. It's not, doesn't yield curses. But if the people, because they were withholding the tithes and offerings, you have cursed me. Why? Because the tithe was holy to the Lord. It belonged to him, and he had provided it for the people to be able to hear the word. So it says, you've robbed me, you've defrauded me, and you've robbed God. So now I love this part, verse 10. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. See all those italicized words in there about there shall not be room enough to receive it? The ESV says, I will open the windows of heaven and pour down for you a blessing until there is no more need. That is so cool. Oh, my goodness. And I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes. And it goes on, of course. But now you know what the storehouse is, right? And why did he say bring the tithes into the storehouse? Because that guy had taken over the chamber. And there was no place for them to bring it. And he's saying that if you do that, then I will open the windows of heaven, meaning I'll pour out the rain. There are no like windows up there in heaven where money flies down from the sky. Right? I mean, there aren't. And we get this picture like, okay, somehow I'm going to get my need met from the windows of heaven. Because the truth is what Jesus explained in Luke chapter 6 when he's talking about give and it shall be given unto you, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, shall men give into your bosom. He explained that, yes, when you're talking about crops, the windows of heaven, the rain comes down and you get an abundance that way. But when you're talking about money, it's happens through men, where men exchange money. Okay, so throughout this entire record in Malachi, in fact, the entire book is about God looking at their motives and saying that their motives of their heart were what was wrong, whether it was the priest, the people, anything. There's lots of other situations that Malachi is dealing with. Isn't that awesome to see the context of Malachi? I just love it. God was looking for their hearts. The priests, you know, they were kind of on top of the food chain, so to speak. Who did the priests tithe to? Nobody. But how much of the tithe did they get? They only got the tithe of the tithe. So even though they thought they were the hot stuff, they were really not the hot stuff. And what God was looking at was, where is your heart? What is your motive? So remember I said that this is all about heart giving, right? So now we just need to look at 2 Corinthians chapter 8. We're kind of continuing on from where we were. In Bob's article in the newsletter, he has a really great line. I loved it. He said, the heart of giving is not about us, but it's about others. The heart of giving. When you're talking about heart giving, you're talking about where is the motivation. So 2 Corinthians 8, I know we're getting on towards towards noon here, but if you bear with me a little bit, I think that we really want to see the application to our day and time, and that you just see this and then you can take it and go and study it some more. 2 Corinthians 8 and verse 8. I'm going to read it from my translation here. 2 Corinthians 8. Remember last week we were talking about how it's all about grace, right? And Paul is encouraging the Corinthians to mimic the Macedonians by participating in this grace also. That's verse 7. Now verse 8 says, I do not actually command you. Oh. Giving isn't a command then? Was it a command in the Old Testament? No, not really. I do not command you, but by the exhortation of your fellow believers, I am testing the genuineness of your love. Testing just means demonstrating or proving. What he wanted and why he was even talking about it and giving reproof to the Corinthians was because their motive was not love. That is not why they were even thinking about giving to the poor people in Jerusalem. They were doing it because it sounded good, because they had to, because somebody said they should, because if they didn't, they would get a curse, because whatever number of other motivations that we've ever had for giving, the only one that works is love. And then he goes on, verse 9, for you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, who on account of you became poor when he was rich, so that you, by his poverty, would be made rich. Now, we got to read a little bit here. Now, I highly recommend to you that this is profitable to you. Remember, it's a command, no? Yes? It's not a command? Highly recommend it, though. But now, verse 11, complete with action what you will, that as you have an eagerness to will, so you would fulfill it in action out of what you have. For if there is a willingness, so he is accepted according to what he has and not according to what he does not have. God always looks not at the amount, not at anything about it, except what is your motivation and where is your heart. For it is not that others should have relief and you should have pressure, but that you should be in balance at this time, that your abundance might be for their need, so that also their abundance would be for your need. Because it's men giving to each other, right? Remember we saw that in the book of Acts, where if you had an extra possession, you would give it so that someone else could have their need met. It's not about selling all your possessions, because if you do, then you are the poor person. Right? Then somebody has to give to you because you don't have enough food to eat. But it's about selling the things that you don't need so that someone else who does need that can have it. And then it uses this quotation from the Old Testament, as it is written, "He who received much did not have excess, and he who received little did not lack." That's exactly what happened with the Levites, right? We showed that. This quotation is taken from Exodus 16:18, and it's about the manna. Where when God gave the manna, the people would come out, and if you had 10 people in your household, you could get 10 people's worth of manna. But if you only had one, you only needed one portion, right? And if you tried to get more, guess what? It turned to worms. Yeah. So you can read the chapter in the book on manna, too, because when they saw the manna, the word manna just means, what is it? Because every time that stuff fell down from the sky, they were going, like, what is this stuff? You can boil it, you can bake it, you can fry it, you can... It lasts all day long, but then if you try to put it in a refrigerator, guess what? It turns to worms. That's exactly what happened. So all the time they were going, manna, manna, what is it? What is it? The point was that everyone would have their need met. And that is the point of giving. So you talk about Titus and you end up in verse 24, "From now on, in the presence of all the churches, show them a demonstration of your love and our boasting about you." The purpose of giving is to demonstrate love. And that is the motivation. I wanted to have one last thought here. If you look at verse 21 there, the Aramaic says, "For we were careful to do the right things, not before God only, but also before men." And King James says, "Providing things honest." Right? Providing things honest before all men. I want to leave you with a thought about what is provision. Provision literally means, pro means before, and vision means to see. When God provides for us, He sees before what the need is. And that's actually one of his Jehovah names. It's Jehovah Jireh. And you can go read about that in Genesis 22 when Abraham takes his son up to the mountain and then God provides the ram who's the substitute, right? And he says that he reveals his name there as Jehovah Jireh is how we pronounce it in English, but it would be Yahweh Yireh, and that means the Lord who sees. He sees before. He knows what our needs are beforehand, so He has made a provision for it. That's the motivation of love that we can have for each other, where we look, we see. Wow, I see God has a need. I want to go help meet that need. What can I do for you? How can I help? It's not only about money. God wants our heart. He wants it to be voluntary. He wants it to be proportional. And He wants us to see that He and acknowledge that He is the source of everything we have. Next time, we are going to be talking about who are the poor? And was Jesus Christ poor? And should we be poor? I don't know. It's a good question. All right, Todd, you want to come up and close? Bless you guys.